This is the Simon Dell Show, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
You know, you can put them in the hand of an influencer. They can create beautiful content, and they can drive a lot of awareness and interest in product purchase. But a lot of startup founders, make that mistake as well, as really wanting to get in and build their vision before they've even spoken to a customer.
Welcome to the Simon Dell Show, episode number 33. Three and three, we've got this far. As you may know, if you listened to the last couple of episodes, we've got a new format now. We're just going straight into the long form interviews. The Spin Cycle is getting its own show, just so we can compartmentalize the lunacy that is Dr. Edwina Luck and Patrick Condren. Today we have Danielle Lewis, who is the CEO and co-founder of an organization called Scrunch. And if you want to look them up, it is scrunch.com. That is crunch with an S on the front for those of you who don't know how to spell crunch. So scrunch.com. She'll talk about how she actually managed to get hold of that .com, which is quite fortuitous. But she's also the founder and editor of an organization called Brisbane Threads, which is an online publication, which again, you can go and have a look. But prior to that, interestingly, she wished to work for Telstra for 12 years. So it's a really interesting story because it kind of jumps about a little bit, but it shows you that all the stuff that she learned while she was at Telstra actually did pay off for what she does now. So really interesting, fantastic lady, very successful. So I think you'll learn a lot from that. So before we jump into that, just the usual bits and pieces, please rate and review us on iTunes if you get the chance. We'd love that. Also go and check out thepodcastboss.com, which is Gilberto, our sound engineer's his website. He's looking for people who want to do their own podcasts. If you're interested in being on the show, if you think you've got an interesting story, especially a marketing or startup or business focused story, daniel@simondell.com, drop him an email, let us know who you are, and he may be able to book you in for an interview. And finally, if you want to come and talk to me, simon@simondell.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I am Simon Dell. I'm on Twitter. I am Simon Dell. And my website, www.simondell.com, which is my digital consultancy that I run with Matt Clarkson. So that's the two of us. We are always looking for new clients and looking to help new businesses, especially ones with a real growth mindset. So come talk to us if you want to on there. Otherwise, let's jump in to the interview with Danielle Lewis. I am joined by Danielle Lewis, who is the CEO and co-founder of an organization called Scrunch, which is a platform for data-driven platform for influencer marketing that enables brands and agencies to discover the right bloggers and social media influencers. And Danielle will be able to see that I've just read that off her LinkedIn profile. So welcome to the show, Danielle.
Thank you, Simon. It's lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
And I would also point out that on your LinkedIn profile, it says you have four locations: Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, and New York City. I'm going to assume that you're in Brisbane right now.
Today I am. Tomorrow, who knows?
When are you going back to New York?
So we've actually just come back from San Francisco about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So the next trip over to the US might be in a couple of months.
Cool.
We're also heading over to London in October. So, global domination on the cards.
Sounds busy. First question, what was the first job that you ever did that you got a wage for?
The first job I ever did was a paper run.
Wow, your second one in a row that did a paper run.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, look, it taught me interesting lessons, taught me how to get up early, had to get those papers out on a Wednesday or whenever it was. So it's definitely a lot of dedication there. I did not love it, let me tell you.
See, I've just interviewed, so sometimes I do these interviews all in one day, and I've just interviewed Lucy Allen, who is a PR person, PR mm-hmm. guru, whatever you want to call them. Down, she works for Thrive PR down in Melbourne, and she did a paper round, and she spent a year getting her dad to do it for her.
So, oh, I must admit, there were some mornings when he did have to cover for me.
Yeah, I always did my paper round. I mean, mine was an evening one. It wasn't a morning one. So, but I always did mine. And then I handed it over to my brother, and my brother then got my dad to do it. So,
That either means
I'm hardworking and my brother's more resourceful. So maybe
that's an interesting way to look at it. Yes, ours was a hand-me-down as well, actually.
Oh, right, just handed through the family.
Yes, got to love it.
So you originally started out in fashion, didn't you? You went to QUT, fashion design. What sort of took you down that road?
Well, to be honest, it was just something that I was good at. So I was one of those kids that I used to sew all of my own clothes. I made all of my formal dresses. I used to have markets for, you know, the girls at school selling bits and pieces. My mum taught me how to sew, well, I think when I was in grade 7, and it was something that I just loved to do, you know, and when I got a little bit older, I loved to make a new party dress for every weekend.
Right.
So it seemed like the thing that I should do, really. It seemed like the thing I was good at. So I put together my portfolio in grade 12 and was accepted into QUT Fashion Design. It was the second year that degree was running. So, yeah, it was an interesting experience.
The obvious thing when someone looks at your profile, and I've got to say, you're probably one of the more, best way of describing this, you've probably got the most interesting path to where you've got to that didn't actually involve what you started out doing, if that makes sense.
Oh, it's definitely been a convoluted journey, let me tell you.
and most people, you can normally see the path looking backwards, how they got to where they got to. But you did quite a lot of time with Telstra, didn't you?
Yeah, I actually ended up doing about 10 years in Telstra.
Yeah.
So the whole, whilst I think I had about 4 or 5 different roles through my time there, always very heavily focused around sales and technology.
Was that something was it just like a sort of Saturday job that you ended up it just kind of expanded into more?
Exactly right. So I used to work in the retail stores while I was at uni. And so, yeah, it was a Thursday night, weekend kind of job.
Yeah.
And, you know, Telstra is one of those places that is amazing at sort of new opportunities, pay rises every year. So it kind of sucks you in. And then you turn around and you go, oh, my God, where did 10 years go? Exactly.
I can imagine. But it obviously, and just for everybody's benefit here, that it was, and the reason I think it's so interesting is because you started in 2003 and you finally finished with Telstra would have been 2015, according to this.
Mm-hmm.
That would have seen a monumental shift in technology over those 12 years.
Oh, absolutely. I remember going through, I don't know if anyone will even remember this, but I was there for the migration from the CDMA mobile network, where you had to have these specific phones without SIM cards, and we had to essentially migrate every user over to these new fandangle SIM card phones. So, yeah, the technology has certainly shifted and continues to shift, you know, today.
What was probably the most exciting thing you saw during that time? Because you would have obviously been probably one of the first people, or at least early people, to be presented with things like the iPhone and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was certainly, it was interesting, you know, being specifically in mobility, I used to see every handset that came around and purchase every handset that came around. And the iPhone was the most exciting. And the adoption rate at which people moved to the iPhone was probably the most interesting thing. You know, it was such a leap forward from what we were used to seeing. You know, every handset that came out was, you know, these tiny little feature improvements. Whereas iPhone really, really, you know, moved the market forward.
Do you remember what you first thought when you saw that iPhone?
Good question. To be honest, I don't think I really understood the impact of it. You know, I was always interested in aesthetics and, you know, came preloaded with these applications, which, you know, several of the other devices did at the time. It wasn't until I really started to understand the applications and the fact that you could actually build your own application that I really understood the power of it.
Is that something that then you kind of, when you realized that, that was where perhaps you kind of understood, was there a sort of shift in your sort of your behavior and your ideas about what you wanted to do in the future when you saw those kind of things happening?
Well, to be honest, no. To be honest, my mind shift, you know, whilst I'd always been around technology, my mind shift to sort of move us to where I am today really came about by understanding entrepreneurship.
Right.
That was something that I didn't grow up with whilst, you know, interestingly, I've worked since a very, very early age. The idea of having my own business was something that I never really thought about, or I didn't think was even a thing. You know, I came from a family that, you know, worked for, you know, 30, 40 years in the same job. So that was sort of what I grew up with. So it wasn't actually until I read the 4-Hour Workweek, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, what?
Do you remember when you bought that? How long ago would that have been? Because that's been about for quite a while, and Tim Ferriss still talks about it.
Oh, absolutely. I think it was around eight years ago.
Yeah, 7 or 8 years ago, because he did a podcast recently where he sort of recapped some elements of it. And funnily enough, I went to the Lifeline Book Fest last week and actually bought it. I've never read it.
Oh, awesome.
And it's on a list of, like, I have a list of about 150 books to read. And I saw it at the Lifeline Book Fest for $5 and went, right, I'm having that.
What a bargain. So, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got to read that one now. So what did you take out of that book when you first read it?
Well, to be honest, that was the moment where it was kind of like my eyes were opened. I read this book that was talking about lifestyle design. Was talking about, you know, working for yourself, you know, creating the life that you wanted, you know, having people work for you. And it was just something that I had never heard of. I'd never had anyone around me that had built their own businesses or talked about it. You know, I grew up very much with, a family that worked very hard, you know, same place, loyal to their employers. And, you know, similarly, a lot of my friend network, you know, were studying, you know, being lawyers or doctors or those types of things. So it was sort of really an eye-opening moment for me to know that was a possibility and that there was another path.
Have you been back and read the book again, or you just sort of occasionally flick to it? Or?
I read it several times when I first got it. But like you, I also have a list of 100-odd books that I'm trying to work through at the moment. So, so there's always a new shiny book on a bookshelf that always grabs my attention that takes priority.
What are you reading at the moment?
So at the moment I'm reading Blue Ocean Strategy.
That's on my list as well. I think I bought that at Lifeline as well.
Oh, really? Anyway, awesome. No, it's actually a fabulous read. It's interesting. I'm one of those people when I start reading, my mind just races around, you know, all of these ideas and what I can implement in our business. So it actually takes me quite a while to read something because I'm always writing notes and bits and pieces. So, but it's a fantastic book.
I'm reading one called The Power of Moments at the moment by two brothers, Chip Heath and Dan Heath.
Oh, okay. What's that about?
Which I would... it talks about the subtitle of it is why certain experiences have extraordinary impact. So it's about how building sort of small experiences within sort of a greater engagement actually helps people remember your business. And the good example they use is, and I wrote a blog about this, was about Disney World. When you go to Disney World, most people after Disney World, 2 weeks later, you ask them, what did you think? And they go, oh, it was the best time of my life. It was amazing and all those kind of things. But if you ask them whilst they were actually there, they were probably standing in a queue for 2 hours. They were getting hot. The kids were crying, et cetera, et cetera. So they tend to only remember the peaks at Disney, you know, meeting Mickey Mouse or going on one of the particular rides that they've always wanted to go on and those kind of things. So Disney kind of, you know, it creates this whole engagement by those peaks, so that they know that people will remember those peaks but won't generally remember the troughs at the same time. So it's all about creating those peaks within, you know, your business and your life and, you know, all those kind of things. So
awesome.
That's really paraphrased it badly, but absolutely.
I've definitely written it down. Don't you worry.
Cool. Before we move on from Telstra, there was one thing I kind of wanted to ask you about that was, Telstra seems to be obviously a very customer service focused business. It's gone through a massive evolution over the years. You know, you find anyone in Australia, and I often did this when I was sort of doing some public speaking, you say to people, you know, who here has had a bad experience with Telstra? And probably 95% of the room put their room up. 95% of the room will put their hand up. And then you say to the room, of all those people with their hands up, who here is still with Telstra? And most of the hands will still stay up.
Yes.
And it's one of those ones where Telstra was that kind of person that sometimes you kind of, you know, you love to hate, but eventually you went back to them all the time. What did you take out of the time there from a customer service and a sales perspective? Because I think that's the things that they probably try and focus on quite heavily.
Yeah.
Did that teach you a lot?
Oh, absolutely. So that's really where I cut my teeth on sales. And I think the biggest thing for me at that time was really understanding that it's all about relationships. It actually has nothing to do with sales. You know, as many courses and, you know, negotiation training and thinking on your feet and all of those bits and pieces that we did, you know, the biggest thing that I learned was that building a relationship with someone and selling, you know, based on that relationship was really key, and that, you know, being there when they needed help, you know, understanding how to turn those horrific moments you know, the horror stories that everyone has, is understanding that they were actually the moments where you could be there for that customer and actually turn that into, you know, a stronger relationship, you know, and more of an ongoing relationship in the future. So, yeah, it's really where I learned, you know, what sales meant to me. And it was, you know, about being a good human, being there when people needed, responding quickly, and building a personal relationship.
Do you know what? I've actually happened to have the book, The Power of Moments, right next to me, and I'm going to read a bit to you because this is really interesting. Mm-hmm. It goes, a study of service encounters asked customers to recall recent satisfying and dissatisfying interactions with employees of airlines, hotels and restaurants. And you could probably add telcos in there as well, but, you know. Almost 25% of the positive encounters cited by customers were actually employees' responses to service failures. So I thought that was really interesting. And one of the things I'd underlined was that, you know, any service failure is an opportunity to actually bring somebody on board and make them into a fan of your business.
Totally. I think that you have to remember that shit happens. And it's how you respond. It's how you respond to it, you know. And that's what we, you know, how we train our team as well, is that, you know, things will invariably go wrong, and it's not something to worry about, focus on, dwell on, or hide. It's actually something, you know, that we should use as an opportunity to make sure that we have a lifelong customer.
Yeah. So somewhere along the time, whilst you were working at Telstra and you've read the 4-hour work week, there's a light bulb that's gone off somewhere. And you decided to create Brisbane Threads. Tell us where that came from and what your thinking behind that was.
Yeah, so that was, you know, very early in, you know, they didn't call them influencers back then, would they? You know, would tend to be bloggers.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I became fascinated with online business and how to, you know, make money online. And so, you know, like every girl, I started a fashion blog.
And, well, these days, isn't it Instagram? You know, Instagram fitness model. That's where they. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, totally, totally. Instagram, yeah, anything, yeah. Really. Yeah, and I just became obsessed with this blog. And of course I went, well, if I'm going to turn this into a business, I better figure out how to monetize it. And so I started selling advertising on the blog. And it was actually through that when I, you know, waltzed into one of the fashion retail boutiques back in the day in South Bank in Brisbane, and I ended up meeting the co-founder of Scrunch Today.
Right.
You know, walking in trying to sell him advertising, and you know, we I did sell the advertising, just if you're wondering. But yeah, so it was sort of that, you know, interesting how it has come full circle from, you know, being a blogger, you know, figuring out how to monetize that online, and then, you know, fast forward 8 years later and influencer marketing is, you know, the crux of our business.
When you were thinking about trying to monetize that blog, what other models did you think you could go down aside from the advertising route? Was there anything else that sort of crossed your mind at the time?
Yeah, so back in the day when blogging was sort of big, it was very heavily around advertising. Today it's sort of moved more to sponsored content. Mm-hmm. But I experimented with bits and pieces like online sales. So I would actually bring together retailers from across the city and have them sort of sponsor products to sell, and so that we could kind of almost create a bit of an e-commerce platform on the blog.
Yeah.
So that was sort of something I experimented with back then. That's a little bit different than the norm.
And it's still running today?
It is still running today, actually. It's actually been a fantastic testing ground for us.
Okay.
So
are you sort of still actively involved, or is there other people running it?
Yeah, no. So it's got an editorial team that run it now. Okay. So we, unfortunately, there's not enough hours in the day.
No, I can imagine. So talk to me about that first meeting with your co-founder of Scrunch. How did that, and you're trying to sell him advertising, and he's probably rolling his eyes going, shit, here's someone trying to sell me advertising again. How did the conversation happen that you ended up founding a company together?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, as cliche as it might be, it's actually a story of business and romance. So, so I have a feeling that he was happy to buy the advertising if it meant like having another coffee. But yeah, so essentially, you know, it was really to go in and talk about what we were doing at Brisbane Threads, you know, and what he could essentially tap into, you know, understanding who our community was and why they would be interested in his retail store. But it did, you know, blossom into a romance, still strong today. though that's a whole nother podcast episode of working with your partner.
yes, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
So we essentially, you know, became good friends, and you know, we sort of realized very early on that we had very different strengths. You know, I'm very much a, you know, big picture, get it done, who cares, let's just try it. You know, whereas he's very much an attention to detail type of person. You know, we both, you know, whilst we had that fashion background, which is actually where Scrunch started, was sort of more in the fashion industry. So we just realized that we could, you know, we're both interested in doing something bigger than what we were doing at that time. So we started experimenting, and Scrunch was born.
How was it born? Was it you kind of, I mean, I'm going to presume if he was running a retail store and you were running a blog, neither of you had any sort of technical background.
Exactly.
How did you start with that?
Yeah, so we essentially brainstormed and came up with the first idea for Scrunch. And, you know, 8 years ago, the first idea for Scrunch was, you know, we were bringing together, you know, creatives from around the world. So designers, makeup artists, models, photographers, and creating this world for them to exist in. And I dabbled in Photoshop at the time and built these shocking wireframes, and took that to an agency. So yeah, we had no technical experience. All we had was a bit of savings, and I'd been saving for a deposit on a house, actually. And right. We decided the house was no more, then Scrunch was the investment, and took that to an agency, and essentially they you know, helped us build the first version of Scrunch.
It's interesting, you're the second person that I've spoken to in a past couple of months who used an agency to build their platform instead of perhaps hiring a CTO or something like that. How did you find that relationship with the agency that they were whilst they were building it?
It ended terribly.
Okay.
Yes.
So my next question about who is the agency, we might just skip that one. But
we'll skip that one.
Yeah, okay, cool. I'll ask you after we finish recording this.
That technical piece was something that eluded us for quite a while. We, you know, we tried an agency, you know, we did the outsourcing Odesk, which I I think it's rebranded these days, model. So, you know, engaging people over in, you know, India or the Philippines or Russia or Poland or all of these different places, and you know, trying to explain to them what our vision was. That also failed miserably, in case you're wondering. To be honest, it really, you know, whilst we experimented with all of these ideas and spent a lot of money on the technology, it was a very, very steep learning curve for us. And it actually wasn't until we met, you know, a technical co-founder and started building our own in-house team that things really started to click for us from a tech point of view.
Why did it fail so badly with the agency? Would you be sitting there today and going, it was the agency's fault, or it was a, you know, naivety on your part, or what's the, you know, if you had to do it again and you had to do it with an agency, what would you do differently?
Yeah, so the biggest thing I think is expectation setting and understanding how agencies work, understanding that, you know, scope creep is a thing.
Yes.
And you know, first time founders, you know, have a new idea every second.
Yes.
And that's not a good mix.
No, that's a terrible mix. Yeah.
It is a terrible mix. So, you know, really being very clear on the deliverables and being able to, you know, articulate those and make sure that a finger isn't lifted until that's defined and described in great detail, which in hindsight is probably similar to the outsourcing model as well. You know, being able to articulate exactly what you need so that somebody who is, you know, English is a second language, or they're in another time zone, or reading an email and trying to interpret it, you know, expectation setting, you know, and being very clear on deliverables is probably something that we lacked in quite considerably years ago.
I think that those two things you've just mentioned there was the scope creep and the you know, brand new business owners or business founders having a new idea every day. I've seen that so many times. You know, the scope creep is a massive one. I think people, you know, if anyone's listening to this and they are wanting to sort of build their own website or their app or whatever it is that you have to be really, really, really defined as to what you want to achieve at the start. And every time you go in and make a change, it's like going in and making a change to building a house. If you want to add a couple more windows, that's going to cost you. If you want to add another door in, it's going to cost you. So you have to accept that that's the same as it is when it's a digital project.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the biggest mistake, you know, we made, not only, you know, those things, but was also building too early, which is something that we see a lot of startup founders, you know, make that mistake as well, as really wanting to get in and build their vision before they've even spoken to a customer.
Do you still have the problem where you're having a new idea every day?
Absolutely. We've just learned to harness it a little bit better. And
I was going to say, how do you train yourself not to, you know, not to be just blurting out to the team every day, right, I know I said that yesterday, but let's do this today, and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so that's actually a huge benefit of having a co-founder, you know, so you can take them out for a wine and brain dump all of these exciting ideas and then go back into the office and not say a thing.
Right, yes.
You know, and keep everyone aligned to, you know, the vision that you set for, you know, the year or the month or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked with startup founders and every day it's let's do this, let's focus on this and that sort of thing. And I've said to some recently, I said, look, all I want you to do is just write them all down on a piece of paper through the next 7 days, and on Monday we'll discuss them. And if by Monday you think they're crap or you've gone off them, then we'll just scratch them off the list. Even just making them hold the bottle of them for a week, actually really kind of filters a lot of the rubbish out. But the other thing is, then if they're still passionate about it a week on in, you go, oh, okay, maybe there's something here. But you're not asking them to wait a whole month or 6 months or those kind of things, and you can kind of move a bit quicker that way. So, but it's my
idea. I might steal that.
Yeah, my friend Simon Bell, who's been on the show a couple of times, calls it entrepreneurial ADD. You know, it's just like there's a new dog. There's a dog over there. You know, that kind of that sort of reaction. So, when you first launched Scrunch and you took it to the world, and before I ask you that, how the hell did you get scrunch.com?
Good question. Well, it was scrunch.co in the early days,
right.
And we negotiated with a Korean company that was squatting on the .com.
Okay.
And purchased it it was actually interesting. We went over to the US to do our first capital raise, and they were really hell-bent on owning the .com. And that was probably five or six years ago.
Right.
It was a really big deal. Like today you see, you know, .co's, .io's, .anything. But it was a really big deal back then. So we negotiated with the company that was squatting on it, and once we'd acquired it, transferred everything over.
Do I want to know how much you pay for it?
Look, I'll tell you. We only paid $10,000. So.
That's pretty good for us. That's pretty good for a .com like that. Something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Was that their price they came to you at, and you just kind of went, oh, okay, let's pay that? Or did you negotiate them down?
I think we started at 20, so it wasn't actually that outrageous, but we felt like we'd gotten a bargain.
I was going to say, I bought for a client the other day, I bought a three-letter.com.au. It's three letters and then .com.au. I shan't say which one it is, but the company that was sitting on that one, and just for everyone out there, you're not theoretically allowed to sit on domains in .com.au, but the company that manages the domains in Australia are the worst in the planet. The most toothless company, the most toothless organization you'll ever meet in your life. Anyway, we got that one for $2,000, and I was like,
God, you're kidding.
I'm having that one, you know.
So, right.
Yeah. And, nice. And that was what they offered to me, and I had to kind of make it look like I had to do the whole, oh, that's really expensive, but see what we can do. And give me the money.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
I know. So very, very happy with that one. But so you've got the .com. You're taking Scrunch to the market. What do you do day one to get the name out there?
Good question. Well, I mean, the Scrunch.com when we first launched was not an influencer marketing platform. You know, the very first product we were working on was a virtual change room for fashion.
Right.
And so it was, very random. Yes. And, and then it was a fashion discovery platform. So the first thing that we did was we wanted to talk to our customers. God, 6 odd years ago, that was particularly fashion brands.
Yeah.
And, so the first thing that we did was the cold sales outreach.
Okay.
Coming from a sales background, I maybe made the assumption, but that it was, really my role in the business to, acquire those customers.
Yeah.
And the way I knew how was picking up the phone
yep.
and calling
yep.
every one of them.
Okay. And how did you go with that? Because, bizarrely, I had a conversation with a startup yesterday who were doing exactly the same thing, and they're doing cold emails, cold calls, and that sort of thing. What sort of success rate were you getting, if any?
Back then when it was that product, very little. So we'd get, we'd get some people interested in having conversations with us, but it was not the right product for the market. It wasn't until we finally pivoted to the influencer marketing platform that the game changed for us. And, we still employ the same strategies. I mean, we're really fortunate now that we get a lot of referral business, from our customers, but, we'll still, an interesting business that we want to work with, and we'll still send an email, we'll still message them on Instagram or pick up the phone. So we're not afraid of that, just cold outreach strategy. It does still work.
I think a lot of people are scared of that. I think people are, and I can understand why, because it's quite defeating if you email 20 people or you call 20 people and they all tell you to fuck off. It's not a great...
You do have to develop thick skin in sales.
Do you think that's something you got through your time at Telstra?
Oh, absolutely. There was nothing like, standing in a retail shop for 8 hours and, learning how to ask open-ended questions and hearing no and all of that kind of stuff. And it's so different in person too, when someone can say no to your face or, be rude to you or, question things. So, it was definitely where I learned to develop, the thick skin and realize that it is a numbers game. If you've got a number to reach, you need to reach out to whatever the number is. It might be 3 times the volume, 10 times the volume, until you get those yeses. I think the thing that people maybe the secret that people don't know is that, you know, success is just persistence. You know, it's how long you're willing to keep going.
So many salespeople I've spoken to just turn around and go, it is just a numbers game. Once you accept the rejection and you accept that it's not personal and you realize that for every 20 people you speak to, you're going to make one sale, you just go, right, well, today I've got to make, you know, three sales. So I've got to speak to 60 people and they could speak to those 60 people in 3 hours in the morning and then have the rest of the day off. You know, so it's a complete numbers game for sales. As long as you're, you know, doing the right thing and you're following the open-ended questions and all those kind of things. But it can be really really challenging to your soul to be told no so many times.
Definitely. But I think that's I mean, it's interesting, you know, where people ask me that question all the time, like what I think the most valuable skill is in, you know, building a startup. And I always come back to sales. You know, I say, you know, you've got to be able to sell yourself. You've got to be able to sell your product. You've got to be able to sell your business. And whether it's to an investor, an employee, a potential customer, you know, yes, having product and tech is fantastic. But if you can't get it in front of the right person that's going to give you money, you're not going to get very far.
There's two things from that one. It's number one, and when you are so right, because you look at perhaps one of the most successful, there's a question mark in there somewhere, entrepreneurs in this world, which is Elon Musk, and he is a salesman. Steve Jobs was a salesman. You know, those people who get up on stage and present their business, they are salespeople.
100%.
You know, and that's all entrepreneurs and startup people should go and have, you know, do a 6-week crash course in sales. And one of the things, again, winding all the way back to Tim Ferriss, when you listen to him talk, he said, if you want to understand fear, he said, next time you go into a store, any store, ask for 10% off. Now, doesn't matter whether you're buying a coffee, buying a pizza, buying a car, buying a computer, whatever it is, ask for 10% off. And for no reason, just say, oh, I'd like 10% off. You know, don't explain to them that you're doing an experiment and those kind of things, and just see how successful you are. And over time, then you just get better and better and better at getting 10% off, and your sales gets better and better and better. So,
so
there you go. Danny, next time you're out if you're going to, see if you can get 10% off.
I will. I'm going to test that theory. I love it.
I mean, you've got to be brave. At the end of the day, it's not a massive thing. It's only 10%, you know, and what's the worst they're going to do is say no. But some people, it's so challenging having that conversation.
Definitely. And I think that that's, you know, I think just to create your own startup is a brave move. So, you know, conditioning yourself with exercises like that or sales or whatever it might be, you know, really sets you on the right trajectory.
And for everyone listening, Scrunch are now doing 10% off for the rest of this week. So if you want to get in there. Danielle Lewis is going to do 10% off if you ask her this week. So
100%. If anybody emails me and asks for 10% off, they can have it.
Right, quick. You all heard that. Okay. So I just want to touch on the influencer market. Obviously, a lot's been spoken about it. It's become this whole new thing in the last 2 or 3 years that you know, as you said, 8 years ago, didn't exist at all. What should businesses be thinking about when they're using influencers? And is it just right for certain businesses or, you know, and there's other ones that shouldn't bother? The final part of that question is, what sort of size businesses? Could anybody use an influencer?
Yeah, and I think it comes back to how we define what an influencer is. You know, if you think about influencer marketing, really it's been around forever. So it's word of mouth marketing, you know, millions of years ago or however long, there's my history showing. You know, if you were a hunter and you found a lion, you would go back to your tribe and say, you know, yes, we've got some dinner. You know, these days, you know, you find a great frosé and you go and tell your girlfriends about it. You know, that word of mouth marketing. But obviously that's one-to-one, and you know, influencer marketing kind of brought it into scale. So you know, one-to-many. But who an influencer is the next piece to that puzzle. And you know, to your question, is it right for everybody? you know, it does depend on who you consider to be an influencer. Like, doesn't have to be that pretty girl on Instagram with 100,000 followers. You know, it could be your customers. You know, it could be a corporate business. It could be an expert in your field. You know, they are all influencers over a group of consumers. So I think it depends on, you know, who actually influences your target market to buy as to who an influencer is for you and whether it will actually work. You know, and I always say to people as well is, you know, whilst I should be saying influencer marketing works for everybody, influencer marketing is like every marketing channel. You know, if you sat down and thought, okay, I'm a new brand, you know, what marketing channel will work for me or what marketing channels am I going to experiment with? You know, you can write down a list of hundreds of different ways to acquire customers, and influencer marketing is just one of those. You know, so you do have to actually test it. You know, you do actually have to approach it with, you know, experimental mentality, you know, test different types of influencers, different channels, different content, different sizes of influencers, you know, to really figure out if it does work well for your business. You know, it's kind of like, and also the next piece to that is, you know, once you've figured out the right type of influence of your business, understanding that, you know, they, you know, can really drive your traffic to your owned properties, whether it be your social media or a website. But, you know, if you haven't updated your social media in 6 months, or your website converts really poorly, or there's, you know, 50 touch points to make a purchase, that's not the fault of influencer marketing. That means you don't understand your own sales conversion funnels. So there's lots of pieces, and it's kind of like when influencer marketing came out, people lost their heads and forgot what marketing was. You know, they yeah. just thought, if I pay this girl yeah. with 100,000 yeah. followers, that all will be right in the world. But it's not like that. It's the same as every marketing channel. You've got to test it. You know, you've got to really understand what type of influence you're investing in and who their followers are. And you've got to make sure that your own house is in order as well.
Who have you seen it work best for?
So the obvious ones that we've seen it work really well for are lifestyle brands. Okay. So your fashion, beauty, travel, health and wellness, food is a massive one. So those really visual products where, you put them in the hand of an influencer, they can create beautiful content, you know, they can drive a lot of awareness and interest in product purchase. You know, when you can see a beautiful piece of content, you know, be able to click on a link to buy, you know, there's a really impulse purchase thing that happens there, which works really well for lifestyle brands.
Yeah. So I was going to ask one question there, and I've then completely, I went off on a long tangent in my head there whilst you were talking about funeral, about funeral homes, because I always remember years ago, someone asked me to work for, do some work for a funeral home. And I was going, mm-hmm. and for some unknown reason, whilst you were talking, I suddenly went, I wonder if influencer marketing would work for funeral homes, but I can't quite see that. I can't quite see that happening.
Yeah, well, you never know. You never know. I mean, you know, a far stretch could be the grey nomad travellers who are big on Facebook. You know, there are the older generations on Facebook trying to connect with their kids. Yeah. I'm seeing a funeral home ad.
I love this. I love this funeral home because they've buried three of my friends recently. Yeah.
I don't know why I went off on that. Going down a morbid path here.
Yeah. I don't know why I went off on that tangent. Sorry about that one for you. Okay. So last three questions for you today. What are some of the brands that you like? Things that you buy all the time, brands that you admire, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. So look, I mean, for me, beauty is a big one. Edible Beauty is an Australian brand that I absolutely love. Okay. Which they, you know, do have amazing designed packaging, but they also, which, you know, suits the home very well, but they also have amazing products as well. If I know this isn't a beauty podcast, but
no, but go for
those
it.
With sensitive skin, okay. It's absolutely phenomenal. What else do I like? You know, obviously I'm a big Apple fangirl. As I sit here with my Mac, AirPods and iPhone looking back up at me. And what will I tell you? Another random one, just because it's sitting right next to me. We bought personalized Swell drink bottles for everyone for Christmas last year for the team.
That's not a brand I've heard of, Swell. is it?
Yes. Well, yeah. S'WELL. And essentially, okay. It's one of those sort of aluminium. Well, I don't know if it's aluminium. It's tinny.
Yeah.
water bottles. It's don't know the technical
sort of metal,
terms.
Yes.
But it's one of those insulated water bottles. So literally, you know, fill it with cold water. It's out in the sun going for a run and it's still cold when you get back to it.
Nice. Is that an Australian brand or is that a overseas brand or?
Great question. It has New York City on the bottom of it.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Nice. There we go. We've all learned something then.
Fortunately, they printed that on the bottom of it. Otherwise, I would not have known the answer to that question.
You shouldn't have said that. You should have just said, yeah, definitely it's New York.
Yeah, probably.
And everyone would have thought you were so well-schooled in the brand. But
no,
you've blown it there, Danielle. Sorry.
Oh, damn it.
Second to
that question.
Second to last question. What's next for you guys? Obviously, we're halfway through the year. It's July in 2018. You said you're traveling a bit. What are sort of the big milestones on the Scrunch horizon?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for us right now is we're going through a bit of an education piece in the market, you know, to really help people understand how influencer marketing plays a key role in their marketing mix. So a lot of people think about influencer marketing as this sort of thing on the side that they need to do, but they don't think about it in terms of its true value and how it can add, you know, value to their whole marketing spend. And I'll give you an example. You know, long are the days gone that it's, you know, just buy out 10 Instagram posts. You know, really we want to be thinking about how can we use that talent, you know, to appear in the brand's content? How can we pick the best performing influencer content and repurpose that on digital? How can we be remarketing to the influencer's audience? So it's really got to play, you know, an integrated role into people's marketing strategies. So, yeah, that's, I guess, the mission that we're on for the next 6 months is, you know, working with our existing customer base to really start ramping things up and, you know, educating the market on influencer marketing.
And we obviously joked at the start about sort of new offices, but are you sort of opening elsewhere in the world or are you putting other people in other countries?
So other countries, not at the moment, okay. Interstate potentially. So we do a lot of travel. Most of our customers are in Sydney and Melbourne. So there's a lot of travel that happens. So we're looking at having key people on the ground there. And then we'll look at the global domination next.
Cool. All right. So last question is, where do people find you if they want to ask you a question or talk to you?
Yeah, sure. So scrunch.com is a great resource for influencer marketing info, case studies and the like. If you want 10% off, email me at danielle@scrunch.com. I hear there's a sale going on. Otherwise, our Instagram is a really cool place to go for inspiration. So I think it's at scrunch, DOTCOM. And you can find like customers that we've worked with, you know, little videos about influencer marketing. And a sneak peek behind the scenes of our fabulous team.
Cool. And you're on LinkedIn, Twitter, and all those. Are you on Twitter?
We are everywhere. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So we can find you. Everyone can find you somewhere
totally.
On the internet.
Google Scrunch. There's not a lot of products called Scrunch other than Scrunchies.
Well, I also expect an email early next week because we're recording this on a Thursday. But I expect an email next week from you telling me where you managed to get 10% off on. And I'll put that in the show notes for everybody to work out whether Danielle was actually successful in her 10% crusade. And what I would actually, what I'm going to ask, how many people in the Scrunch team at the moment, Danielle?
So there's 16 of us at the moment.
Okay. I think you should set that as a challenge to your team next week that they've got a week to work out how many places they can get 10% off at.
So good. And then, I love it. Challenge
maybe
accepted.
Maybe some sort of prize for the winner. Because I would love to hear that as a social from an influencer company, I would love to hear the success that they have trying to influence other businesses. That's worth sending a cameraman out with them to see what sort of success they get. But anyway.
So good. I love it.
Thank you very much for being on the show. Really appreciate your feedback and your ideas and your thoughts. So thank you for your time.
Fantastic to be here. Thanks for having me, Simon.
Thank you very much for tuning in to the Simon Dale Show, episode number 33. We appreciate you every time you listen to us. It would be great to have you back. next week. Remember to rate and review us on iTunes or come and find me at simondell.com. We will see you next week.